Are you ready for more fun in the depths of the site?
Yes.
Housekeeping details. I put up there on the whiteboard dates for next semester in the fall. As you know, we're restricted to an every other week schedule on this rotation because the room is apparently used other times. Now, there's a problem. November 22nd is Thanksgiving. December 6th, I have to be away. Question, is December 20th too late to have a class? It's a Thursday. I think Christmas is a Tuesday or a Wednesday. But we're getting into Christmas time. It's okay for me, but I wanted to check with everyone.
I don't have any plans.
It's okay. So that'll give us 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I think that's what we had last semester because of conflicts and stuff. So is that okay? So I'll send that out. I just wanted to confirm that those dates are okay. Another housekeeping detail, coffee money. I wonder if we should chip in a little money to the church coffee.
Yeah.
Not now, but maybe next time. Say $10 a piece, would that be all right?
Mm-hmm.
And just sort of a thank you. And I will call Karen and I will email her those dates a little closer to. I'll call her, say, around Memorial Day-ish. And then I'll email her, I'll call her again in the fall and email her. But if you guys happen to see her, say things like, well, did Gary ever call you? Just follow up that she doesn't forget. I assume we can still keep using this room. I hope so, because it's a nice space. Thank you for the beautiful curtain.
So fancy.
Stylish, as we are.
Yeah.
And we just have one more meeting.
We have one more meeting. I think that's all I wanted to say in terms of housekeeping.
Question on this. It's the same time?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you get my email about your downloading? I went to the
Yes, I changed it.
You did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Have you checked recently?
No, because I've been gone. So.
Oh, yeah, I changed it right after I got your email. I thought I didn't. Didn't I email? I might not have emailed. I did email.
You may have. Yeah, I was going.
Yeah, it's changed. The only thing that's weird about browsers, you check if it comes up the same way it did before. Mm-hmm. That's the browser's problem because it will see a website and it'll say, "Well, we've already looked at this," and it'll pull up the website out of the computer's cache. They call it. They store stuff you've looked at.
So 38 might be somewhere else on my computer.
No, it's just if it comes up the same way it did before, just go to options and delete your cache. So it'll load a fresh one. Very unlikely, but it does happen.
I can delete my cache. I have no idea what you're talking about, but
I'm trying. Wait, it's not very personal. When you watch when you look at a web page,
uh-huh.
Without you knowing it, the computer saves that web page to your hard drive
okay.
in a file called the cache. C-A-C-H-E. So when you go back to that page, the computer checks the website and sees if there's been a change to that page. If there's not, then it just loads up the page from your hard drive. And it saves internet traffic.
Well, my question, though, was that it was 39 and that it was 2 days after today. It was.
Yeah, I changed that
okay.
all.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Are you getting ready to read off?
No. We'll do that later.
I don't want your money.
I'm already banished.
I
owe
money.
Did everyone get to listen to Sandy's link?
Right. No, she didn't because I didn't have the right email address. I'm sorry.
No, I didn't get to listen to it.
Oh, well, I should have bought it then. Mm-hmm. That's okay. If you get a chance, watch it.
Okay. I've got the link.
It's a little-known video of Jung being interviewed at Balligan.
Okay.
and it's not particularly good quality, but I will refer to it. Basically, what he does, he says, they're interviewing him about the stone. Remember, we talked about the stone. That his entire psychology is in that stone, which sort of gave me pause to consider. So now we're leaping into a little review of last week. Remember, we talked about the stone last week. Where was that? Yeah, here. We had Telesphorus, we had the helpful guy, we had Atman Victu, etc., etc. And what I was trying to do last week was take these figures and tell you what they mean. Well, if the entire psychology is in these figures, we would be here a long time. So I just wanted to make you aware how it's given me pause to consider how I'm presenting this material now. It's not accurate to say, oh, Telesphorus equals this. As Jung says in the video, Telesphorus personifies my entire psychology.
And that stone is the one he carved at his home.
Well, let me see. Where did that happen?
In the bog.
Is that a head, I think?
Yeah.
And it has that figure of Telesphorus.
I can't remember. Yeah.
Right?
Where did that happen? Is it back somewhere?
No. There he is.
That's Fani's.
Oh, that's Fani's. Okay. But he has him marked, the little guy, as Telesphorus.
Yeah, it is Telesphorus. But what I was trying to do was give you an interpretation of the figure. And that's not quite accurate. They are symbols for everything that's going to come from now till the end of Jung's creativity. So how I understand what we've done so far is, remember, we had all those opposites. And then we had images beginning of resolution. Fani's was one, the crucifixion, the tree. And now we start having masculine figures appear. Those masculine figures, I think it's safe to say, will represent all the ideas that he's going to have which become Jungian psychology. And that's pretty much what we did last time. The Victor, the youthful supporter, I think that's the youthful supporter. That's Telesphorus.
And the tiger.
Atmavictu and tiger.
Let's see, what image number is that?
117.
Did you say tiger? Is it a tiger?
What?
That
looks like it.
Yeah.
Let's see. He explains it all in footnote 222.
Right. What's he say about that tiger?
Anything?
No, I don't think.
Let's see that.
Oh, well, other than the reference back to his childhood box. Remember that little box he said he carved a little mannequin and he put it up in the roof?
You don't mean in reference to the tiger.
Well, to the whole thing. Yeah, and to the whole idea that these images are coming up which are going to reorient his mind. So we, that's where we stopped. So I was just going to try to say things like, you know, what is the main new theme that these figures introduce? Say with Telesphorus, I would say, just by the name, it contains the name telos, goal. So one of Jung's major contributions is that the goal, the psyche, is goal-directed. Remember, for Freud, there were these inner figures, but they were instincts. For Jung, they're people, inner figures. And we know when we work with them very often, they don't give up their autonomy if we talk about cause, but only when we talk about their purpose. So I think this is the kind of shift in thinking that is beginning here, and we'll see more of it. But be aware, when I say that, I haven't exhausted the meaning in any sense. That's what I learned from the video link that Sandy passed out.
Telesphorus being literally goal?
Well, telos. It's got to have some relationship to the word telos. Telos means goal in Greek.
Goal.
G-O-A-L.
G-E-L-O-S.
T-E-L-O-S. You know the word teleology? In theology, it means the goal-directedness of religious events. That's, I think they're all cognates. At Mivictu, we'll see more of him, but again, I'm just slapping a label on, knowing it's very limited. I would say that's the whole process of transformation. So we'll see, he gets slaughtered, and out comes gold. So he would represent everything we've been through up to now. You know, the dissent, the struggle with the two sides, and the synthesis, and the disorientation that Jung went through in that time. The helpful figure would be Phanes. Eros.
He associates him with one of the Kabiri, which are like a dwarf would be in a dream. It's that creative.
But see, I think the creative comes out of Eros. That's another thing he's discovered. I would like to talk to a biblical scholar to confirm this, but I'm pretty sure every time the word that we say as love in the New Testament is agape, which means brotherly love. But Jung is talking about eros, which is sexual love. And that changes things quite a bit. Again, very, very rough. But you can forget about what I said if you like, and just remember, we're getting images of what is going to become Jungian psychology. And these images are coming to him because he has gone through that death and rebirth. So that was the emotional experience. Now he's getting the insights that come from having gone through that emotional experience. That's how I would try to understand it. And again, be aware that it's probably a lot bigger than that, but I'm just trying to give us some handle to grasp onto. So what I think we're going to see coming up is a quieting down of the storm and a reflection on what we've gone through and ideas coming up which will form the basis of his psychology. The dialectic, you know, of synthesis, antithesis, thesis, antithesis, synthesis. That's what he's come upon up to now with all those figures of the Salome and Elijah and the young girl and the old man, things like that. And so they have been, that split between wisdom and passion has been wrestled with and solved. Now we get the insight that comes. I think. We'll see whether I'm right. But. So now we'll begin to see thoughts and comments on what we've gone through these past 17 million years. Okay, so we're at 304. And I think here we can go kind of quickly, because what he does here is simply ask himself in the first column, is it over? What's this crazy desire? Is there more blood to drink? That's the first paragraph. Second paragraph. Your lowest is in a sleep resembling death and needs the warmth of life which contains good and evil inseparably and indistinguishably. So he's realized that the truth is going to come out of these difficult emotions. A little further down, it's the mother of all abominable deeds and salutary symbols. So he's accepted that difficult emotions can be transformed and lead to insight, requiring mistakes along the way. Why do I say these things? I would cite this sentence as possible support of where I'm going. Second column, go down 6 lines. Not until our spirit lay dismembered on the altar did I hear the voice of the Son of the Earth, and only then did I see that he was the great suffering one. So I take that to mean that out of the dismemberment we've seen him go through, so to speak, he is beginning to hear and understand things.
So who is the Son of the Earth? His lowest?
Well, I think that would be the spirit.
Okay,
yeah. The guidance that comes to us through nature. Through dreams, through the body, through emotions. And amen, it is finished. The second paragraph there.
Could we just go to the next sentence? He is the chosen one, since he was the most rejected. I had that underlined because I wasn't quite sure what he meant by that.
Well, I'm not totally sure, but I'll give you my guess that it was nature and the spirit of nature that was rejected. This is all my interpretation, so you may hear it different from somebody else, but I'm trying to tell you also why I'm saying what I'm saying. But see, he's kind of going back and saying, oh, I've been through something, here's what I've gained. And then he'll continue building on that gain, I believe. So we really are at a watershed point.
Do you think that he would call that?
Absolutely. Without a doubt. You know that quote I love so much from Thoreau, don't be simply good, be good for something. If you're good for something, that mitigates where you weren't so good. That's Thoreau's way of saying the same thing, I believe. You know, what have you accomplished? What have you given the world? And yes, you've probably made mistakes and caused pain along the way, but is your gift bigger than what you've soiled along the way? I think it's so important because people don't undertake the challenge of developing their very beautiful gifts because they'll be criticized or they'll do something wrong or it won't be in fashion or it will cause difficulty somewhere, and that's the greater wrong. Was that Jewish saying that when you get to heaven, I forget what his name is. You won't be asked, why weren't you good? You'll be asked, why weren't you Jane? So it's recasting morality into a greater good.
I always think of that, you know, being Catholic. All sins will be forgiven except the sin against the Holy Ghost.
Well, that's, you know, that's pretty close. It certainly is. I wasn't, you know, I guess I'd heard that, but that didn't occur to me and see it in that light.
It's sin against life, I heard it said that.
Jung would say the Holy Ghost would represent your development. So don't sin against your development.
This reminds me, too, of the scripture about the talents, and if so he's afraid and buries it.
Yeah, I think you can hear it in there, but certainly that's not what's been made of it.
No.
And that woman in Fort Wayne that was fired for in vitro fertilization, they didn't say, are you fulfilling yourself? They said, you broke rule number 7,483,219. That's what we're living.
Sometimes the teacher that got her kids fired up about some project because she allowed them to read, I don't know, a book or poetry, and then the school board fired her because she didn't get permission. She had asked for permission, they just never got back to her.
Where was that?
It was on the south side. It was
here in Indianapolis?
Yes,
wow.
In Indianapolis. It was something that might have been a little bit on the risque side, but some parents might not have liked.
Yeah.
But it was, I mean, it was not anything.
Well, see, there's the rejected, right there.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking about this whole debate, too, and the whole moment in the country about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, it just seems to me like the ones who reject that, you know, and I guess in South Carolina they rejected, they voted.
North Carolina.
Or North Carolina.
Yeah, yeah, they sure did.
And I'm
sorry.
Mm-hmm. You know, okay, one thing that keeps me still drawing all these lines of demarcation, and saying, oh, that's the sin, that's okay, and love is okay, but this one little box.
What? Yeah. The church doesn't like it? You're saying what you're saying?
The Vatican has spent a year or two studying with different convents, and a lot of them here. Like one thing they said the nuns shouldn't be doing was rightly. I mean, I remember this because I don't know a lot of people do that. But, and I don't know what it is that they're supposed to be doing. But they're,
well, nothing with the body.
Right. Yeah. Right.
That's exactly what, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I suppose because we ordained a female priest here on April 15th. Oh, yeah, don't be a priest. By golly, that's a sin. You're a woman. Don't even show up at that ordination. You know, I mean, just show up and say.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
I think you've grasped the essential point. More reasons why I'm saying what I'm saying. Look at the last paragraph there on 304, the middle sentence. I divided myself into two, and in that I united with myself. I became the smallest part of myself.
Where are you?
304, second column, last paragraph about the middle. I divided myself into two, and I united with myself. Let's do that. What we've seen, that union of those, that conflict.
So in this column, he goes from talking about, I'm just double checking my thinking here, the son of the earth,
mm-hmm.
and then he talks about who is it that has help the son of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
And then he says, I am he, that nameless one.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about himself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I understand him saying it's the crucifixion I've just gone through, where I've given up all of my previous categories, or boxes, as you guys have just said. I've given up all my previous boxes, and I'm seeing everything new. And the really new thing I'm seeing is the body has an intelligence. That's my words, but I'm just trying to encapsulate the top of the message. Because the body, if you know how to read it, and by body I mean desires, I mean emotions, I mean sexuality, desire for the world, within the instincts that motivate that part of our life, there is a spirit. And it's the same spirit that's come down from heaven and is recorded in the scriptures. Another way to put it is, I'm seeing a fuller version of the spirit. And that's what I've discovered. But I was talking to a clinical psychologist recently, and he was very sympathetic to Jung. And we were talking about what is different about Jung. And some of you know I have this friend who's doing a residency in psychiatry, and I've been sort of following along with her all the different therapies they've been learning, cognitive behavioral, psychodynamic, you know, behavioral, you name. And I finally realized the one thing that Jung has that nobody else has is there is an inner spirit. And it's not some philosophical statement. He shows how that thing works. So, and that's what he's coming up with here against everybody else. And still it hasn't been accepted by psychology. Anywhere, I don't think. Certainly not in any collectively accepted psychologies that are taught in universities or training programs.
Because they're all about making everybody fit. If you're talking about inner spirit, people with inner spirit may or may not fit into the collective. And if your goal is to get people to fit into the collective, you have to talk about what is right and what is wrong.
I don't think that's quite fair. They do allow that the individual has to at times be against the collective, but they don't see the extent to which that is true and how really it is lived out in a creative personality. I think they've come as far as to say, well, you know, groupthink can be harmful. But they don't see how revolutionary the spirit can be. There, I think you are right. Yeah.
What's kind of new with the spirit is not easily validated scientifically. It can't be measured
right.
in the traditional ways.
Right.
And so that... everybody's got to be very scientific and empirical. Prove it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Carl.
And Jung does prove it, but it's a more self kind of proof than
exactly.
Scientists are willing to,
right.
To go along.
The problem is it's not repeatable.
The process is repeatable.
Well, in a way, it is repeatable.
How it manifests in each individual doesn't look the same.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it is repeatable. You see it over and over and over again in one expression of an archetype after another.
But from the scientific mind, that doesn't count because of the lack of regularity of appearance.
Very literal idea of appearance.
Yeah, exactly. I told you the story about that doctor I was talking to. Maybe not everyone's heard it. That I was telling him that I worked with a guy and we got rid of his diabetes through our analytic work. And it stayed away for about a year and a half. It eventually returned. But for a year and a half, he was free of symptoms. And I said to the doctor, "And that's a fact." He said, "No, it's not. It's an anecdote." That's the scientific mind.
Yeah.
Now, if I could take 50 people and show that therapy would work, they would believe me, but it won't work with 50 people. But it worked with one, and that doesn't count for them. Same thing I told you about this kid at Butler. one of my classmates at Butler did this study of the effects of meditation on impulsivity. It's quite a smart idea, I thought, for an undergraduate. And he set up questionnaires, had people meditate, and did a follow-up. And it failed miserably. And he said, out of 50, only 3 got better. I said, "Why don't you write your paper on those 3? He said, "Because I put that idea to my advisor, and he said they are not statistically significant." That's the scientific mind.
You ask those 3 people if they think
they're significant. Exactly the point. Yeah. So, all this is coming up. Jung really wants to be a scientist. But he's realizing that the facts he's seeing are called anecdotes by others. And he doesn't surrender his allegiance to the facts he sees. Okay.
Fact doesn't factor, and that means what makes real or what makes reality. So I think his definition of reality is what works for a person.
Yeah.
What's in their mind.
Mm-hmm.
That's real. That was really real to him. Mm-hmm. More real than X percentage, and it makes it specific and significant. So,
I'll tell you a follow-up story. Maybe some of you heard this. So I was talking to these two guys. I took these two guys to lunch. And the other guy said, "But my research got good results, and I got a very good grade in my paper for the psych department." I said, "What was your research?" He said, "Imagine this. Measuring how long an elephant's foot stays on the ground when it is running." Can you think of anything more absurd?
And irrelevant.
That was my question too, but that's the project he was given, and he measured it, and he could show that it stays on the ground a certain amount of time. He went down to the zoo and watched them. A certain amount of time when they're walking, when they're running, and it was.
What, I mean, was there any purpose or conclusion?
Well, I didn't have the heart to ask him. I was trying to be tactful. I want to say, what a stupid idea. Both guys knew the psych department was ridiculous, but they wanted to get their degree.
The elephant thing was in the psych?
It was psych.
Yeah.
Psych.
I thought maybe they just wanted to learn how to pay for some research.
Yeah, and probably then on that.
And then find out something that would be worthwhile.
No, this is for his honors thesis. In psych.
How long ago was it?
6 months.
well, the crazy guy that I worked in was statistically.
Uh huh.
That's all he cared about.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, you see where we're driving at. Okay. There's just a couple more figures. I thought we looked too.
Should we turn the light on? Have a good look.
All right.
We're in the dark, sort of.
Yes, I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa.
Better.
Woo.
That much. Woo.
I don't think he tells us, does he?
Oh, yes, he does. Something about bad spirits.
Oh, yes.
Spiritus malus.
Right. Can you find that, Carol?
Yeah. It's in the footnote.
It's man's dark spirit, something or other.
Yeah, here it is.
Let's see. I don't know those last two words.
Spiritus malus in omnibus evil spirit in some men.
Mm-hmm.
What's the note?
Footnote 222, page 303. It's hard to keep these little figures straight.
So very hard.
See, Telesphorus is sort of the evolution of fun. He says in the footnote.
Does he? Yeah. I would say don't drive yourself nuts.
No, just want to sort of keep it in the...
Okay. I found it was easier for myself to say these are all figures that are coming up after the Night Sea Journey.
Well, I sort of have to have a particular personal interest in the progression of image.
Okay, well, you are entitled to it.
So I guess that's me.
So if we call Telesphorus the creative spirit, that creative spirit would tame what is dark and destructive in it.
Yeah, that's very
not
important.
Not that the beast is, but he's calling it the dark spirit in man.
You know, putting it in psychobabble, I would say that some complexes can only be integrated from the point of view of purpose.
Point of view of what?
Purpose.
Oh, purpose.
Again, very limited way of putting it, but I don't think it's incorrect. Because the reason I want to qualify that, he said, you know, my carving of Telesphorus on the stone in Balligan contains my whole psychology. And so I think we have to respect that, and he might get upset if we heard him trying to encapsulate his psychology in one word. But I think the thing that is unique about his psychology is that he looks at things teleologically. So it's not like what's wrong with you, but what's right with you that has not yet come to fruition.
So say that again, Gary. You said complexes can only be...
I think some complexes can only be integrated when you understand they have a purpose. Some can be integrated when you talk about cause only, you know.
Okay.
Some can only be integrated through purpose. I'll give you an example from my own life. You know, I had a negative father complex. My father was not a bad guy, compared to what I've heard sitting where I sit every day. He had his problems, but what person doesn't? Yet I had this negative father complex. And we got along, but it was always tough. And it also showed up in my distrust of authoritative men. Now, I worked on that in many different contexts. What caused that bad feeling? I got nowhere. I just kind of gave up. And then, some of you heard this, when I started, and he died relatively young. He died at 69. A heart attack, but quick, which was benevolent in many ways. But still, before his time, and my mom's been alone. And so I just lived with that. And I sort of figured that was my fate. Well, when I started working on this Pauli material, I spent about a year on it, and I thought, am I just wasting my time? You know, I'm not getting any younger. I spent all this money and time on this stuff. And while asking that question, I had the following dream. I dreamt that I was lecturing on Pauli in the Strasbourg Cathedral. Strasbourg Cathedral is a beautiful Gothic cathedral in Strasbourg in Alsace. And one of the unique features about it is they didn't have money to finish it. So it's only got one spire. It should have two spires. So that conveyed already the idea of a work in progress. And in the dream, my dad was there and was going to introduce me. And I thought to myself, you know, this is the test. If my work on Pauli is right, it will heal my father. I gave the lecture. I looked over. Not unlike the Fisher King, he had become youthful and rejuvenated, and I knew he would live long into old age with my mom, and I woke up. From that moment on, my feelings towards men changed. I now get along with authority figures much better than I ever did in the past. I mean, the thought of becoming a friend with a Republican when I was 25 was incomprehensible. So you'd have to say that negative father complex could only be integrated when I understood its purpose, which was to direct me to my destined work. I think that's, and we see that in often that the thing won't go away until the purpose of an individual's life is recognized. And then it's seen in terms of the whole. That's something that Jung discovered. And I think that's who Telesphorus is. Or that's an aspect of Telesphorus.
And you were talking about the tiger in that respect.
Right, and then see what that does, if you know your purpose, those energies that once seemed problematic now have a place.
So Telesphorus helps find that purpose.
Or he's representative of the purposefulness of life. I think that's how I put it. You know, there's just a novel come out which I... It's too hard for me to read. It's in French. Called, I think, The Part of the Other. You know Eric Emanuel Schmidt? You ever come across him? Did you ever see Monsieur Ibrahim, that movie? He wrote that. And it's a novel about Hitler's life if he had not been rejected from the Art Academy. Art Academy. He applied to the Viennese Academy of Art and was rejected. And then started his spiral down. So there again, if he had been able to be an artist, would he have become the Hitler we know? In other words, was the purpose of his life thwarted? And now that's a bit simplistic, but these are the kind of questions that I think are being entertained in the collective mind. Or else the guy wouldn't have written that novel.
And so then the dark spirit, we could say, took him over.
Right.
Because he wasn't living.
Because he wasn't living its true meaning. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have to admit, if you go online and Google Adolf Hitler art, it's up there. It's creepy. I mean, there's nothing wrong about it. It's like nature scenes and, you know, pictures of European buildings. And he was actually a very good draftsman. I mean, they're very accurately painted, but there's something creepy about it.
No people in there. Are there very good people in those?
You might be right, Carl. Yeah. But anyway, that's just a little diatribe on purpose and how important it is for Jung.
Well, Philosophers here looks exactly like Bonnie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I guess you're right then, Carl, that he would be a... What I would say more, they are different facets of the same jewel. I got bogged down when I tried to say, oh, well, this leads to this and this leads to this. That's all. And I thought, well, why not just look at them as different facets of the same thing? Eros is teleological. That's the foundation of Jung's view of transference. Should we move on to the next picture?
Yeah, we're at that place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So the picture reads, the accursed dragon, that's Atmavictu, has eaten the sun, S-U-N. Could you set the light for a second? I can't stand it with the size of the print. Okay.
So we're on footnote 226.
226, bottom of 304. The accursed dragon has eaten the sun, its belly being cut open, and he must not hand over the gold of the sun together with his blood. This is the turning back of Atmavictu, the old one. He who destroyed the proliferating green covering is the youth who helped me to kill Siegfried. And we had Siegfried definitely way back. Okay, you can kill the lights again if you don't mind.
That's a mysterious statement.
That's a very difficult statement.
So, do you think the proliferating green covering could be nature and unconsciousness?
Well, here's how I've tried to make sense of it. But I am not, dedicated to this understanding. I think the green covering is the process he has just gone through. The death and rebirth. Because it was very fertile. And the green grass itself goes through a death and rebirth every season. And the sun is the new light by which he is going to develop Jungian psychology. Prior to this moment, that sun in him worked to support his power complex. That's why it has to be so closely guarded, lest it fall back into his power complex. But those suns are the new understanding that will become Jungian psychology.
To me, this is him getting the guts, the meaning out of the experience.
Right. Exactly.
I noticed that we're back, it's like the other image was prophetic, that lavender on red that made me feel so sick.
Which
here
one?
It is again.
Which one was that?
What image was that? Was the worms?
Mm-hmm.
Should I go back?
That's pretty far back.
Is it too far back?
It's quite a ways back.
Okay.
There was lavender on red and mm-hmm. it made me sick. Anyway, it was a worm. But this dragon has that same worms mosaic
mm-hmm.
on its body. Mm-hmm. So it was like those worms were some sort of representation of what was to come, but now this dragon.
Mm-hmm.
I was taking those as more his intestines, the dragon's intestines.
Well,
yeah.
What I'm talking about, worms.
The red.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, the red is the blood.
Right, I got that.
The pink is the intestine.
Right? Yeah,
that's
what
how
I
see
thinking.
It, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But the pattern I was talking about...
Oh, pattern on the dragon.
On the dragon is the pattern he made those worms with.
I see.
And then he used that pink
yes.
on red motif.
Mm-hmm.
But,
I don't know, that sickening feeling, I wonder if that's somehow related to his statement of don't give the son over.
Yeah.
How does he say it? Don't give the gold of the son together with his blood.
Must not mm-hmm. hand over. Hand, and look what he's cutting off.
Yeah. So
the hands and the arms of the creature.
Uh-huh. That lavender sort of, the color seems symbolic of that statement to me. A warning.
Of which statement?
Not to hand over the son together uh-huh. with the blood. I mean, maybe it's a matter of distinguishing that some sort of understanding between meaning and desire,
mm-hmm.
perhaps.
That's where I would go.
Or some sort of
mm-hmm.
distinguishing there one is what can be found within the other, but they aren't necessarily completely. I don't know.
Well, I would just take it a step further that he's realizing who he should protect these sons from.
No, I'll say more.
Well, don't cast pearls before swine.
Oh, yeah,
doesn't he talk thoughts. About that a little bit here about, I'll have to find it, but something about
sure.
what others will do with it.
He might.
I mean, I feel like it's a... Oh, go ahead.
Maybe you shouldn't share what they could do with those that wouldn't understand.
Yeah, and again, my take, you are free to have yours because I'm not certain at all, but he is developing such a new point of view that he has to be careful that it doesn't get invalidated and shut down by criticism from outside. And he spent his life documenting his insights, but he's just now getting those insights.
It seems like there's something else going on. I can't quite put my finger on it. Some sort of symbolic. I don't know. It seems important to me, but I can't quite put my finger on it.
I was wondering what the significance of cutting off his legs, like you don't have a leg to stand on, and he's cutting off legs, like that's the old, the sort of
already green.
Yeah, I don't know. My thought was it's just, he's saying, you know, sort of like, that's the whale, and I'm Jonah, and the whale phase is over. I have gone through it,
and
I'm moving on.
Well, Atma Victu is going to progress into
right.
Philemon and Ka.
Right.
That's an earthly soul.
Right.
And an elaboration of Atma Victu. Because Atma Victu presented himself in the wrong fashion to man. We said last.
Yeah.
He says in his footnote, and we said, well, maybe that's how the dark element didn't get presented properly in Christianity.
And the price it cost him to deal with it.
Mm-hmm. So Atma Victu is being recycled here, so to speak.
Right.
And his spiritual essence is being maintained. Because
and
the gold is coming out of its blood, and the blood is the sort of
yeah.
spiritual essence of a thing.
Yeah.